Mother Nature can be a little inconsistent in her watering strategy, so sometimes she needs a little bit of help. This hour, when and how to water your lawn and garden. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Linda Nave and Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will be here. We'll talk about how the heat of an Iowa summer affects our plants and talk watering strategies. Linda and Richard will also answer your questions about the plants in your life. Send your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or call 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to talk about watering, although Mother Nature just did quite a bit of watering across the state of Iowa. With me today is Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, and Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulturist. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Very good. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being here. And all right, we were planning on talking about watering, and we're still going to, but what is the dryness status across the state?
Well, if you look at Iowa, basically the western part of Iowa, south of Highway 20 and west of Interstate 35, for the most part, is abnormally dry. Northern Iowa, northeast Iowa, east central Iowa has plenty of rain. And then you actually have a moderate drought in southeast Iowa, south of Iowa City.
All right. So if you are in one of these dry areas, what kinds of changes are you seeing in the environment at this point, whether, you know, it's a moderate drought or just a dry spell?
It's pretty darn dry for many of our plants. You dig down quite a ways, and it's just powder dry on top. For example, in central Iowa here, between Ames and Des Moines and a little bit further southwest, we've had 1 inch to an inch and a half of rain the entire month of June. And those rainy times, it sounds like, oh, that's not too bad, but they come at 1/10 of an inch at a time, which doesn't do any bit of good when the soil is this dry. So it'll rain 1/10 of an inch and you go out there and it's gone. So it's kind of getting critical over in our part of, in certain parts of the state. And as Richard said, the line is so distinct from Galesburg, Illinois, just down south of Clinton, Davenport, south of there, almost to Burlington. Burlington, if you draw a line from Burlington to Spirit Lake, in the, anything in the northeast corner, that northeast corner is, they've got a lot of rain. But if you look at it the other direction, south and west, it's pretty darn dry. So it's kind of interesting the way the weather pattern has been this year. I'm no climatologist, but it's quite interesting.
It looks like a little bit of a patchwork quilt.
Yes, and when it looks like it's going to rain, it thunders and we get a couple drops. So it's pretty critical right now. Lawns are brown. Richard and I were just talking about how the leaves just on the trees look a little under stress. If they're not a dingier green than they usually are, they seem to be even almost drooping on some things.
Right, and I've even seen in central Iowa a little bit of yellowy color on some of the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the trees, like the river birch, when they're under stress, some of their leaves turn yellow and they fall off.
Mm-hmm.
They basically shed them because they don't have enough water. So I saw that yesterday, especially because we had a kind of a windstorm with a small thunderstorm. Didn't get much rain, but we had some wind. And after that windstorm, there was quite a few leaves on the ground because of the actual wind. So definitely the trees are showing some signs of stress.
And it's not just the lack of rainfall. It's been the heat as well. Because you can talk about two things. You can talk about how plants and soil lose moisture. And then, of course, you can talk about how you give it moisture. But let's first talk a little bit about how the soil and the plants lose moisture. Plants lose moisture because they take it up from the soil and then they transpire it. So it's kind of a cycle in and out, in and out. And soil loses moisture from surface evaporation. So you have transpiration going with the plants and evaporation going from the soil. So those two ways, and when it's hot, the plants are sucking up a lot of water, but they're also breathing deeply, you might say, and transpiring a lot of moisture out. So they're losing a lot more than they maybe would be when temperatures are in the 70s. And we don't get as much evaporation either when off the soil when the temperatures are a little milder. So the hot weather really does attribute to more drying, even at the rainfall, without the rainfall. So we have that problem going on. So we can talk about how you give water to your plants, what's right and what's wrong.
Well, yes, I think we should. And let's break down which plants we're watching, because I think a lot of people watch their gardens really closely because, you know, we've put a lot of time and investment mm-hmm. into that. But you were just talking about trees looking stressed.
Right.
If you see, and I'm guessing mostly younger trees
right.
in your landscape that look stressed, what do you do?
What I would do, I would check anything planted in the last, let's say, 3, 4, or 5 years as far as trees and shrubs. And if I go out there and I notice the leaves are kind of droopy, kind of hanging down, if the color is kind of a grayish green, not a vibrant green, that to me is a sign that they need some water. And so I would go out there and water them slowly and deeply. You can do that with a hose if you have a hose that will reach. I would just bring it out there, take off the nozzle, turn it on real slow, and let it soak for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And I would go around the tree or shrub, maybe like a 12, 6, 3, 9 pattern, and really soak that plant thoroughly, and then come back maybe in a week or 10 days and check again.
All right. Now,
and possibly water.
If you're seeing trees that are significantly older than that, that look stressed, I mean, you were just talking about the birch trees, that kind of thing. Is that something you need to react to, or is that just something to notice?
Yeah, I would notice it, but I wouldn't react to it, because a well-established tree has a huge root system, and drought is a part of their life. And so they can typically deal with it pretty well. So I probably wouldn't worry about them too much. But anything planted recently has a fairly small root system, and they just can't bear with that or tolerate it nearly as well. So,
all right. What are some of the other plants in our landscape? And we'll talk about watering gardens in just a moment. But what are some of the other plants in our landscape that we should be keeping an eye on that maybe we don't usually need to water?
Well, your perennials would be one. The perennial plants are those that you want there, and they're going to be there for a long time, we hope. And so you want to maintain their health. And so many are not really deeply rooted. Some are. Some of the prairie type plants, such as the purple coneflowers, the rudbeckia, they have a very deep root system because they're inherently adapted to dry weather. They have very deep root systems, but some of our common imported perennials don't. Mums, for example, really don't have a very deep root system. So you want to keep those well watered if you've got them in the ground right now. And other perennials, coral bells, some of our shade plants, our hostas, keep them well watered, because oftentimes your hostas are planted in the shade below a tree. Well, the tree is going to be sapping a lot of water from that dry soil, and the surface will be dry where your hostas may not get that moisture. So keep those kind of things in mind when you're watering. Your perennials, you've invested a lot of money and time into them, so keep them well watered. Your annual plants, same thing. Although they're an annual, they're going to be gone next year, but so you don't have any long-term relationship with those plants. But but your annuals, you got to keep them watered. And an inch of water per week is really ideal for your annual bedding plants. And that inch of water shouldn't come 1/10 of an inch at a time. It should come as an inch of water per week. So a good soaking. And this takes a while to get that soil, because what has to happen when you're watering, you'll water a little bit, and until that first surface part of the soil gets to field capacity, then it'll drain down into the next level. And so it has to kind of work its way down. So if you water just a little bit, it's just going to stay in that surface quarter of an inch, half an inch, and not really get down to where the roots are. So a good deep soaking, as Richard mentioned with the shrubs, is important with your other plants as well.
Well, and we've talked about when you're watering a garden like tomato plants, that kind of thing, you don't want to just squirt the hose toward the garden.
No.
With your perennial plants, how do you want to deliver that water?
A light soaking, even a sprinkler when it's not windy will work, but you got to keep that sprinkler on quite a while. So it gets really, and you can really tell the difference if you leave it on for an hour or 2 hours. That plant's getting nice and well soaked. And the sprinkler does a good job in the sense that it is slow and it soaks in and then it comes back. But at the same time, we're wetting the foliage. That's a trade-off that you have to do. But it's been so dry in certain parts that I don't think is going to be a problem right now.
And wetting the foliage can be a problem because it can breed disease.
Right.
It can, right. Mm-hmm. So early morning would be ideal. Let's say 6, 7, 8 in the morning would be ideal. It tends to be fairly calm in the morning. Mm-hmm. It's cool outside. You don't have much evaporation. So morning would be ideal if you can.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at tomatoes. You mentioned tomatoes. And I've got a chart here from the University of Missouri, one of their publications. It's kind of interesting. It talks about how old that transplant is, your tomato transplant, and how much water is needed per day on that young transplant or a fruiting transplant. So if we look at our plant that we planted after 1 week, it only needs about 12 ounces of water per day. So that's a cup and a half of water per day. However, as we get to about 7-8 weeks after transplanting, when that plant is setting fruit, lots of flowers, lots of foliage, we are up to 75 ounces of water per day per plant. That's a lot of water.
That is a lot of water. And again, you don't want to just squirt it with a hose, right?
Right. So that, again, point taken, that if you're using a watering can, you can figure, a half a gallon of water on my tomato plant. You can kind of estimate that, but that's one tomato plant. So you think about that and you think, well, am I really applying that much water on my one tomato plant? Probably not if you're using a handheld hose.
All right, and before we get to the break, let's talk about lawns, because you mentioned there are parts of the state where lawns are turning brown. Now, grass is pretty resilient, right?
It is. Kentucky bluegrass is actually pretty resilient. When it's dry, the grass will turn brown and go dormant, but the actual grass plant itself is still alive. It can stay in that dormant state basically just fine for typically 4 or 5 weeks. And as soon as it rains or you irrigate, it will green back up. So the typical dry period of a few weeks, the grass is fine. You have to worry when the dry spell lasts maybe 5, 6, 7 weeks. And so maybe after 5 or 6 weeks, you might want to start to water just to keep the grass alive, because eventually it could die, but normally it doesn't.
All right. So hopefully we won't get to that point this summer. We're not there yet.
Right.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions. With me this hour, Linda Knave and Richard Geron of Iowa State University Extension. They are here to answer your questions about all of the plants in your life. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. And with me to answer your questions, Linda Knave and Richard Geron of Iowa State University Extension. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll start with an email question. This is from Dayton. How many people could use fall leaves for mulch in their gardens? We collect about 1,000 bags worth of leaves each fall for our garden, and it helps to add organic matter to the soil and reduces weeds. We collect leaves from the Ames area. We like to put manure from the barn in to help with composting. By late summer, the mulch is composted to soil. What do you think about that?
Well, leaves are a good mulch. It's nice to kind of shred them so they break down a little bit more quickly, but you can apply those to vegetable gardens, other areas. So if you have that, opportunity, yes, you can definitely do that.
All right. And adding manure in with the leaves?
Well, basically that might help to break it down a little bit more quickly and also supply some nutrients. There aren't a lot of nutrients in the actual leaves themselves, so you're kind of encouraging the breakdown of those leaves.
And I want to stress, too, emphasize that if they're adding manure to their leaves for composting, that's fine and it's good. It does, as you say, it breaks down and it adds to organic matter content within your soil. But backing up, if you're putting that on your vegetable garden, you've got to be real careful. Food safety concerns kind of start stepping in. Now, used to be the rule that for organic producers, if they're using animal manure, particularly raw animal manure, non-fully composted, you have to wait 120 days from the time you apply that until you can actually harvest that crop that's touched the soil. And that's pretty much everything, really, because the splashing of the water sometimes affects, even if you have green beans, will splash up on your green beans. So that's 120 days. Now, if it's composted, we're looking more like 70 to 90 days, or excuse me, 120 days for raw and up to 70 to 90 days for composted. So that's a safety, food safety concern, because we're thinking about things like salmonella and E. coli that's in that animal manure. So, but if you're putting it on around your trees, your shrubs, on your lawn, or on your perennial bed, fine. It's good. But all just right. Be concerned when you're putting manure, anytime you're putting manure-related products on a vegetable garden.
And I would love to see Dayton's yard and garden, because 1,000 bags of leaf, it sounds like they have a lot going on there. Must be pretty impressive. All right, mm-hmm. You can call with your questions, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll get another email question in here and then get to the phones. This is from Kathy. I have quite an infestation of Japanese beetles. They're devouring my hybrid tea roses. Suggestions on how to control or get rid of them, and I guess they're back, huh?
They are in certain parts of the state, especially western Iowa this year. As far as control, control is very, very difficult. And that's because new ones continue to emerge from the ground over the next several weeks. And so you're going to have them until probably early to mid-August. If you want to try to control them, you can spray, you can use insecticides. But if you do so, you have to spray often, maybe every 2 or 3 days, because they just don't have a long residual period, and you keep on having more and more beetles fly through your area. So you have to keep on doing it. On the positive side, they're not going to kill the plants. They're not. But they're going to make them very unattractive. So you might have to learn to live with some of the damage, or maybe try to at least reduce the damage. That's more realistic.
All right. And there's one more Japanese beetle question here on email. This is from Amber. We have a newly planted purple leaf plum tree in our mm-hmm. yard. And this week I noticed Japanese beetles on it eating the leaves. Other than picking the beetles off by hand and putting them in a bucket of soapy water, what can I do? And I'm reading that because this is a newly planted mm-hmm. tree. Mm-hmm. Is that of greater concern?
It is, because it's not a very healthy tree. It's a young tree, doesn't have a good root system. So the actual beetles feeding on foliage can cause more damage to that plant. They do like certain plants. They like certain trees as far as lindens, some of the plums or cherries, and some of the willows, and they will actually decimate the foliage if they're present in large numbers. So in that case, I think I would make an effort to control them, and I would spray the tree periodically with something like 7 or 8, and try to reduce the damage and make sure you keep the tree well watered. They can't deal with dry conditions and also the insect feeding, so make sure that you keep the tree well watered also.
All right, and let's get to the phones. First up, Jeff in Des Moines. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, Fort King. I have a tree, an old tree, that breaks our heart. And it's been dying for a couple of years. It's a bur oak, and it got wilt and some fungal infection. But it must be 200, 300 years old. I sent in photos to your email today, but probably you haven't gotten to it. But my question is, can I have the arborist, when he cuts it down, cut cross-section, and then we could count the rings?
Sure, you can do that. It can be done. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, and that, is there any value in the wood for a woodworker?
Oh, sure, it might be, yeah. Right.
Okay. It does have canker growths on the knees of the tree down, and like I say, it's really massive. It's,
right. Mm-hmm. So when you cut it down, obviously, you want it to be solid. Sometimes when you do that, you might find some rot or decay. So if you find that, it's not going to be very useful. But if you cut it down, it's perfectly solid. You can definitely use it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The interesting story with that is they were putting up a new new building on campus here at Iowa State, and they had to take some pretty old oak trees down that were on that site, and they recycled that wood and turned it into all the woodwork benches in the building are now made from that oak. So it's
that's wonderful.
Yeah. So yes, you can reuse that. It's
we're
not all
have
wasted.
Like a ceremony when the tree is cut down with Native Americans and Bishop of Iowa, and because we feel responsible because it was on our watch that it died, even though it was other.
Right, it wasn't your fault, but that's
no,
neat, Jeff.
The phone company or the Mid-America dug a trench and dug a hole at the base of the tree about 3 years ago and exposed the roots all summer long. So that basically killed, exasperated and
it could have been one of the factors, right?
Mm-hmm.
A tree can only stand so much, and then you reach a breaking point, and maybe that was a breaking point for that tree.
Well, Jeff, I'm so sorry for your loss, but it sounds like you could do some really neat things with the wood. Do you guys have any suggestions for Jeff? And when he is looking for somebody who can do things with the wood, where do you even start that process? Would arborists know how to connect you?
That might be a possibility. You might actually contact people at the State Fair, possibly. There are people that actually have furniture there, and there are people carving things at the State Fair, so there might be some contacts there, too.
All right, so look around and be creative. There are people out there. All right, let's go to Don on the line in Cedar Rapids next. Hi, Don.
Good morning. A bit ago, Richard talked about grass going dormant.
Mm-hmm.
I have a particularly bad spot in the back of my lawn. There was before the house was built, there was a real sharp, small hill and a big tree on top. They took it out and didn't recover any topsoil. And so it went down 10 feet or more. And the soil there is sand and clay. In that area, my grass doesn't seem to go dormant, or if it's dormancy, it lasts for such a short period. And over 30 years, I've replanted most of that.
Okay.
What I do is, if it looks at all stressed, I water. And when I fertilize, I have them double fertilize, or not double, but add a little fertilizer to that area, and I tend to keep it. But this summer now, again, it's really looking stressed. Am I doing the right thing? And what grass seed, what type? Should I use bluegrass or fescue or what if I do replanting?
Well, if you do some overseeding or seeding, if it's a sunny area, I would go with bluegrass, a bluegrass mix of at least two or three different bluegrass varieties. I would be sowing the grass seed probably late August, early September. But if you're having this problem continually, you might want to consider maybe digging up the area, working up the area, and maybe bringing in some compost and working that into the soil to improve your growing conditions. And if you have better growing conditions, maybe you can put an end to this problem in the future. So you might want to consider that.
Okay. Each time that I have repair the grass, I do dig it up, and I have in the past always put in a lot of peat, but I haven't brought in compost.
Right. Well, organic matter is very, very beneficial in that it breaks apart your clay soils nicely, but it also helps in retaining moisture if you have a sandy soil. So if you could bring in maybe 2 or 3 good inches of compost and work that into the upper 6 to 8 inches of soil, I think you can improve the growing conditions for the grass where hopefully this wouldn't occur in future years.
But what I'm observing is it does appear to die within a couple of weeks of getting stressed. Is that a legitimate observation?
Usually it doesn't do that. Usually when grass is under stress, the first thing you notice is it has an off color where it turns kind of a grayish green. And then if the dry conditions persist, it turns totally brown. The grass blades do. but the actual crowns, the roots are still alive. And usually those plants will survive for 4 to 5 weeks just sitting there dormant, totally brown as far as the foliage. And then if it rains or you irrigate, it usually takes about a week or 10 days, but it will green back up. We get concerned when the dry period lasts 6-7 weeks when that grass is brown, because eventually it may die, but it usually takes like 5 or 6 weeks or more.
There's a couple situations too with your lawn. If that particular area is on a south slope, so it's slightly sloping, it's going to dry out and heat up much faster and lose moisture faster. So if that's a situation, yes, it probably does die after about a couple weeks because it's in a very tenuous area, so to speak. Also, if you've gone out and watered a little bit to bring it out of dormancy a couple times, the plant isn't going to survive. If you leave it in dormancy, it will do better. But if you just try to nudge it out of dormancy but not really get it out of dormancy, that stresses the plant even more.
All right. And if he has a spot where he just can't seem to grow lawn, is it time to think about other landscaping options too?
That would be a possibility. Maybe put in a flower bed. But they still may have that water issue as far as it may just not be a very good site. I'm guessing they're going to have to amend the soil to some extent.
Right. Don, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Hannah in Des Moines. Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Hi. Well, I'm a gardener, and I was wondering, I have a hard time telling the difference between overwatering and underwatering. When I overwater, they seem to look like they need more water, but I think that's a little counterproductive.
Well, when you're dealing with most garden situations, most plants would like an inch to maybe an inch and a half of water per week. And if we're getting rainfall, perfect. As far as watering, when you do water, water slowly and deeply. And if you do it about once a week, you should be fine. You basically overwater when you water too often, where you keep the ground basically saturated. Plant roots need the water and nutrients, but they also need to breathe. And if you keep the ground saturated, all the pore space in the soil is basically filled with water, and so they basically drown. So you want to make sure that you don't water too often, but when you do water, water slowly and deeply.
Okay. Is there anything, I guess, a difference of how the plant will react?
Well, the symptoms actually can be fairly similar in that when you overwater, basically, some of the roots end up basically drowning. They die. And in that situation, even though there's all this moisture in the ground, the plant may wilt because it's not getting enough moisture because the root system simply is too small. And so the symptoms can be fairly similar as far as the wilting. Oftentimes, if they're overwatered, the leaves may turn yellow also, so you'll see that in some cases.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Liz is up next in Cedar Falls. Hi, Liz.
Hi there. I have a tree question also. So my apple tree is not looking good. The leaves are curling up. There are spots on the leaves. I'm wondering, is it too late to spray?
What kind of spots? As far as yellow, brown, black?
Brown.
Okay. I'm guessing it may be apple scab, which is a very common fungal disease. We see it on apples and crab apples. Typically, you see spotting of the foliage. The majority leaf will turn yellow and then drop. And as far as apple scab is concerned, it's a fairly common thing. It does not kill trees. It doesn't. But the tree, if it's a susceptible variety, may lose a large percentage of the leaves, maybe half or more. As far as controlling it, you can't do anything at this point if it is apple scab. It's way too late.
Okay.
The actual infection occurs in the spring as the tree is leafing out. And so basically May, early June is when the infections occur. And the weather is a key factor. If we're having a wet May and early June, then those conditions favor apple scab infections. And so you may, if you have a variety or cultivar that is susceptible to apple scab, they're going to lose a lot of leaves. If we have a dry spring, even though you may have a susceptible variety, a leaf drop may be minimal. So the weather is a very big factor. As far as when you buy a crab apple or an apple, you may want to choose a variety or cultivar that is apple scab resistant. That's the best way to avoid that problem.
Hmm. Okay. Hmm. So one other tree question. Can if my cherry tree is all done, you know, the we're done with the cherries, can I trim a couple of lower branches off at this point, or should I wait till next early spring?
Well, if it's just one or two, you can do that. Mm-hmm. Pruning in midsummer is okay. If you're going to do several branches, I'd wait and do it in late winter.
Okay. All right, but I could do a couple now.
Yeah, you can.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks for your call, Liz. And we'll squeeze in one more email question before the break. This is from Brian. Last week I staked up my tomato plant and it promptly wilted and died. Is it too late to replant?
No. If you get a fairly decent-sized plant, you'll be able, and start as a transplant, you can replant. You're looking at somewhere around 70 days, so it'll be really late into the season before you get tomatoes. But I wouldn't wait much longer, though.
Do it today.
And get
Do
a
it
fairly
this weekend.
Good start plant. Yeah, get a good, fairly good-sized plant that has nice foliage, not necessarily fruits on.
All right, you'll probably have to go to the farmer's market anyway to fill in July and early August, right? All right. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me this hour, Linda Nave and Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your calls, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Linda Nave and Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension. And let's go to the phones. Marion is on the line in Lynn Grove. Hi, Marion.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
We have a voodoo lily, and I realize it's a bulb and an annual in our area. It grew about one spike with a leaf, huge leaf on top, and it was about 3 feet tall. And then we received strong winds that broke it off. Will that send another shoot this year, or should we just dig it up and dry it out for next year?
I'm not real familiar with the voodoo lily, but from what I observed with other plants is chances are it's not going to send up another one because Mother Nature tells it, you know, it's too late. We're just going to reserve what we have. So I would not expect it to or want it to. Richard?
Yeah, probably not at this point. It's a tender perennial in our climate. Mm-hmm. We can keep it from year to year. We have to bring it inside in the fall. But at this point, if it broke off, my guess it's not going to re-sprout.
Mm-mm. Thank you so much.
But I wouldn't say it's dead. Keep it.
No.
Yeah.
Right. We'll just dig it up and put it back in the basement.
Okay.
And just save it till next spring.
Good.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Marion. Good luck with that. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Kevin is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
You have some information about what to do if you've got a big tree to cut down?
Well, a little bit. I belong to the Des Moines Woodworkers Club, which is a very large club, 400 woodworkers in central Iowa. It's based in Des Moines. So there's a lot of amateur interest and some professional interest in good wood, but I'm no expert on this. I didn't catch where the gentleman who had the failing bur oak was from. I didn't whether he was from central Iowa or not. But my couple of points I would make is that whoever he has cut down the tree, if they are a good, experienced tree person, can give him some guidance on the value of as to whether or not he wants to have it milled. He needs to keep in mind that if he wants to harvest that wood from that bur oak, that it's a long process, that it needs to be milled, it needs to dry before people would buy it. There are several good sawmills in central Iowa that do this. Just quickly, I'd tell him that if he Googled Des Moines Woodworkers, He would find our club's website and a point of contact. But again, those are going to be people that are interested primarily in wood that's available to cut that's already been dried.
Okay.
But besides talking to his tree guy who removes the tree, he wouldn't go along if he consulted a district arborist.
Okay. Or a district forester.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kevin.
District forester.
Yep. Thanks a lot for the advice. And we had someone else who also said, call your DNR district forester. And we know they're incredibly helpful. So
yes, we know one actually.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. Pretty well. All right. Let's get back to the phones. Tyler is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Tyler.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I'm curious. I'm looking kind of for like a decoration to go around my house. Previous owners had some dying plants and stuff around there, so I just kind of took them out. But I think it'd be really neat to kind of do like a bunch of prairie flowers, kind of go around the front and the side. But I kind of want something that I don't have to do a lot of maintenance with or like replant every year. I'm also curious if it'd be better just do like a shrub instead. But just kind of looking for suggestions, really.
Well, it's up to you. I mean, you can definitely plant some native plants, native perennials, some ornamental grasses, some of the native ornamental grasses like a little blue stem, Indian grass, that type of thing. You could also put in some native wildflowers like
purple coneflower.
Purple coneflower, butterfly weed, that type
Rebecca.
Of thing. So definitely you could go that route. And they are perennial plants. They're low maintenance. They tend to have very few insect and disease problems, so definitely you can go that direction.
You could, except that you have nice planting during the summer months, but in the winter you don't have any winter interest. So you got to kind of weigh that as well.
Right. I had shopped through like a Lowe's or a Home Depot or whatever it was, and they had a mix that was just called like butterfly and bee mix. And it was just kind of seed. I think you just spread it around or whatever. That's kind of to get like a big...
Yeah, but oftentimes they don't work very well. Oftentimes they don't work. Now, those seed mixes, they may have seeds of plants native to the U.S., but they may not be native to the central area, the Great Plains. Okay. So they may not actually perform very well long term. You might get a very nice display for a year or two, and then they die out because they're actually not native to this area, and the weeds come in. So over time, it becomes a weed patch. So I'd be more inclined to buy things that are truly native to the area. And you can buy plants at garden centers. There are companies that specialize in native plant materials. So you have those options, too, where you're actually buying things that are actually native to the area.
All right, and if he's looking for seeds, this is not the perfect time of year for that.
No, I would be, if it's a small area, I'd prefer to buy plants because that's the best way to establish them. You can buy the plants. If it were a huge area, like an acre or so, I would buy seed, but a small area, I'd buy plants.
Where are you from, Tyler?
Des Moines, right?
Kind of the east side of Des Moines.
Des Moines, okay. Again, use your internet search engine and look for native plants sources here in central Iowa, because there are a number of places. Because I know a few over in eastern Iowa, such as Ion Exchange over in eastern Iowa, that does sell plants of the native plants. So there's places out there that really do focus on plants that are native to your particular region.
And those plants are getting easier and easier to find
in lawn and
garden centers.
Absolutely,
everywhere.
Yes.
So if you call the garden center and say, hey, do you have any native plants?
Mm-hmm.
They are likely to.
Yes, they will.
All right. Yep. Tyler, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Dave and Spencer. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. What is the cause of blossom end rot in squash? I seem to have a lot of problems, especially in my summer squash the last few years.
Well, blossom end rot occurs in summer squash, the zucchini, tomatoes, peppers, and a lot of garden plants. And what it is, it's caused by inconsistent water source, where the plant gets plenty sometimes, and then other times it dries, and then you give it more. So a consistent supply of water is important, and it usually occurs only in the not only, primarily in the early season, the first fruits to set on are suffering this because the roots may not be deep and able to get the deeper water. So bear with it. What can you do about it? You can mulch to help keep that soil moisture consistent. You can water regularly. Pick off the dead fruit, though, or the infected fruit, because it'll just sit there and rot. So take it off, throw it and discard it, whether it be on a tomato or zucchini or a pepper, because the plant is utilizing water to feed this fruit that's never going to amount to anything. So take it off the plant. But give it a good consistent water, and it will snap out of that. Now, commercial producers will use things such as the calcium because it's a calcium deficiency, but typically our soils aren't short in calcium, just consistent moisture.
Well, I was wondering if it was the same cause as blossom end rot in tomatoes. So it is, but it's calcium and water, right?
Definitely.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Yep. You're welcome. A lot for your call, Dave. And next up, Hannah in Preston, also a squash question. Hello, Hannah.
Hi.
What's your question?
I've got some summer squash plants I have. I have three in, and I've treated them with an insecticide, and I don't have any squash bugs on them, but the fruits keep coming on and dying.
Well, that could be possibly due to maybe poor pollination. You have separate male and female flowers on the squash plant, and for the fruit to develop, for the female flowers to develop into fruit, you have to have adequate pollination. And so pollinators like bees transfer the pollen from the male flower to the female flower. Now, you have to be careful using insecticides, because if you use insecticides on these plants, that may kill the pollinator. So you're not getting very good pollination. Mm-hmm. So be very careful using insecticides on these plants.
Okay.
So try not to use them if you can. And hopefully with the increased pollinator activity, you'll get greater fruit set.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Hannah.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Corey's next in Davenport. Hi, Corey.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Hey, we got a hybrid tomato plant of some sort we got from the local garden shop, and the leaves towards the top are very small, and they're curling in towards the center of the leaf from the edges. And it seems like the leaves at the bottom are full and large, and that seems to be all right. But I'm just wondering what could be going on with that.
So the upper leaves are curled. Is that correct?
Yeah, curled. Yeah, curled on the edges of them are curling in towards the center.
Okay. If it's just curling upward, that could be a condition called leaf roll, where the leaves are perfectly healthy looking as far as a nice green color, but they simply roll upward and can roll very tight. Okay. That's a physiological problem, not a permanent thing usually. It doesn't usually affect their health. They typically still go ahead and produce well. So it may be just that. If the leaves on the top were curled and twisted and distorted, then I would assume that may be exposure to some type of herbicide drift, where you would...
See, they do kind of look twisted in some areas also, and I'm wondering if the neighbors may have sprayed and we didn't know about it.
Right, because the newest foliage is very, very sensitive to any type of broadleaf herbicide like 2,4-D and dicamba, very sensitive, and if they get a very small whiff, those new leaves are affected, and they grow abnormally, and you have the curling, twisting, and distortion, okay?
Yeah, but if that's more what it seems like.
Okay, usually they'll come out of it fairly quickly, if that's the case, but people should be very careful using broadleaf herbicides in the summer.
Right. All right, well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Corey. Next up, we have John on the line in Coulter. Hi, John.
Hi. Specific answer to my question. I got two of them. I planted a bunch of fruit trees, and I need to know how much water should I be giving them, like 5, 10, 15 gallons every other day or twice a week? And then the other question is, do they need any kind of a fertilizer?
The second question is easy. They don't need fertilizer, but they do need to be watered if it's not raining. And I would say if the plants are not getting at least an inch of water per week from rainfall, then I would go ahead and water deeply. I don't usually recommend amounts, because if you go out there and just dump it all at once, it's probably going to run off into adjacent areas. So you want to water slowly and deeply. 1 gallon is not going to be enough. It's going to be several gallons. And you might want to apply that maybe in two or three applications, where you put on some, let it soak in, come back maybe in 15, 20 minutes, apply some more, let it soak in, and then come back again a third time and let it soak in nicely. And if you do it once a week or so, you should be fine.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. And Anthony's on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Anthony.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes. The question I had is I have some potted vegetable plants, tomatoes, cucumbers, zucchinis, and also two hanging topsy-turvies. And I've been getting different opinions about how much I have granular organic fertilizer, how much and how frequently to use it. I've been told only do one application in the beginning when they're young plants, and that should be enough for the season. But I've also been told that as the plants develop, I need to add more fertilizer. So I was kind of, you know.
Well, there's a number of factors involved in that. When they're growing in a container, they're growing in a fairly small amount of potting soil typically. And the plants are going to use up quite a bit of nutrients. And then you also leach out quite a bit when you water every time. And so usually the nutrient levels spiral downward pretty quickly. Typically, you probably have to do that once or twice a month. It really depends upon how strong it is as far as how much you're actually putting on. So if you make it a very dilute solution, it could be every 2 weeks. If it's a little bit stronger solution, maybe once a month.
Okay. And I've been listening to you've been talking about this 1 inch of water. I keep hearing an inch of water. That also apply with, say, I don't know, topsy-turvy has multiple, can hold multiple plants as opposed to a container that has a single plant. Is the 1 inch of water rule applied there also?
When you're growing in containers, that's a really different situation. When they're growing in the ground, 1 inch of rain or water is all they need. But when they're growing in a container, that's a very different environment. And so they're going to dry out much more quickly, especially something up off the ground. So on some of these, you're probably going to have to water maybe every day.
In a terracotta pot, we call them clay pots, they are porous and they lose moisture very, very quickly. A glazed ceramic pot or a plastic pot won't lose moisture as quickly as a clay pot. So keep that in mind as well. And the drainage hole, water, we like to say water till water goes out the drainage hole. When you see water coming out the drainage hole, that means you've saturated it pretty well. Unless, of course, the pot is so dry that it has soil has cracked and moved away from the sides of the pot, and then the water just drains down there.
Right. Don't let that happen.
No. That's a problem.
You're in trouble.
But if you water regularly and water so that the excess flows out the drainage hole, you can be fairly assured that you've given it enough water at that particular time.
If it pulls away from the sides of the container, I'd probably take it and put it in a tub of water for maybe 15, 20 minutes.
All right, Anthony, thanks a lot for your call. And let's squeeze one more question in. This one's from Dorothy. I think that earwigs destroyed the bean, beet, and Swiss chard seedlings in my garden this spring. Will they be a problem during fall planting?
Well, the earwigs like moist weather, so if the dry conditions persist, their population may drop very dramatically.
All right, and she also is wondering how she can outsmart them so she can grow these vegetables.
I don't think you can really outsmart
them.
No,
you can't. Richard and I were just talking about them earlier. Yeah, they're very sneaky.
And they're very hard to control with insecticides,
yes.
So...
All right. Well, maybe more on that next week or in the weeks to come. Linda Nave and Richard Duran, thank you both so much.
You're welcome.
Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa today with Linda Nave and Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension. We'll be back again next Friday with Hort Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa. Have a great weekend.